We're going to be looking in the book of John this morning to finish our series. So if you would turn to John chapter 21. If you grab one of the Bibles in the back that was on that table, we're going to be on page 934. John chapter 21. I want to mention a few things just before we get into the text this morning. This is the last week that we have in our Things Jesus Said series for the summer. And we're going to be going back to finish the book of Ecclesiastes. And so for those of you that had those kind of study companions, those notebooks that you got, you can bring those again next week. We're going to be back in the book of Ecclesiastes to finish it, and we'll finish it before Christmas. So just so everybody's aware of that. Two more things. One is the first week of September, which I believe is next week, the first Sunday there, we are having our first week of 213 Youth. That's a youth group for the fourth through sixth graders. And so parents, tuck that away in your mind. If you want your fourth through sixth grader to come and be a part of that, we're going to meet here in the Ministry Center at 6 o'clock next Sunday. And it's only the first Sunday of each month, just once a month to interact with your kids, teach them from God's Word, and try to help them grow their understanding of God, their faith. And so parents of kids age in the age groups of fourth through sixth grade, let me know if you're able to come, you want to be a part of that. And if any of you are interested in getting involved and helping out, we could use some volunteers if that's something that interests you and wanting to hang out with fourth through sixth graders for an hour and a half. I know that sounds super exciting. For some of you, it actually does. Let me know. We just have to make sure you have child clearances and things like that, and it's going to be a good fit for you in that ministry. But let me know if that's been nagging at you, if you're wondering if you can get involved there. And then the last thing I want to point out is that on September 18th, Bethany Camp is having a 70th anniversary celebration, and you're invited. You just have to RSVP by the 16th if you're going to go to that. It's from 2 o'clock to 6 o'clock, I believe, and you're more than welcome to come celebrate. Kind of the activities of camp will be there. There'll be all those things for you to do, food as well. Well, I know it's on a Sunday, but it's at 2 o'clock, so you can make it out there very easily. Just make sure you RSVP to the camp by the 16th. And so we encourage you, go check out the camp. If you've never been to Bethany Camp, if that's something that you've always heard about, you know, the kids go to, some of the families go to, you've never actually been to Bethany Camp, check it out. This would be a great just afternoon for you to go see the camp, be in nature, enjoy what God is doing through your support here as a church, and just see it for yourself. You won't have to stay in the cabins. You won't have to wake up trying to figure out what you're going to do to get ready by the time breakfast happens. None of that stuff. You can just enjoy the camp there for that day. That is it. We're going to be in John chapter 21 to finish up this series on things Jesus said. The things that Jesus said matter. They're important. They're significant. And we should take them to heart. We should learn from them. We should grow because of them. And we want to make sure that we're doing that. And so this is, like I said, the last week that we are. And hopefully, looking at some of the things that Jesus has said, that we've read through the Bible, has been challenging for you. It's been kind of giving you this room and space to grow, because you're hearing his words, you're hearing them again, and you're listening to them, and you're letting them challenge you and change you. Hopefully the Holy Spirit has been able to use that and work more in your life because of this series. This last week, we're going to look at one of Jesus' last recorded conversations. Not the last, but one of his last recorded conversations. And the conversation comes just after Jesus has risen from the dead, but before he ascends. So it's in that space between the two events. He's risen from the dead. He hasn't ascended, obviously, because he's still talking to them. And so let me give you the short context of these verses. We're eventually going to be in verses 20 through 22. But I want to give you the short context, and then we're going to talk really about how we can best understand what Jesus says here. But the short context is that Jesus has shown up at the Sea of Galilee early in the morning, where he finds seven of the disciples fishing. Sea of Galilee was their home. They're very familiar with that area. Jesus is from there. He grew up there, rather. Many of the disciples, when he first called them, they're from Galilee area. So this is a very familiar region to them. And so he shows up early in the morning, and seven of the disciples are there fishing in boats. They'd been fishing all night without a catch. And so then Jesus miraculously helps them catch a lot of fish on the other side of the boat. This is a familiar story to you because this has actually happened twice to them. It happened the first time when Jesus shows up and introduces himself to them. They're like, we're not catching any fish. He's like, how about the other side? They're like, well, that doesn't make any sense, but we'll give it a shot. And then they catch a lot of fish. 3 years later, Jesus shows up and they're fishing all throughout the night. They haven't caught anything. And he says, you guys haven't caught anything? They said, no, they don't recognize him. That's important to know. And he says, how about the other side of the boat? And they're like, that's weird. We've never tried that before. And you want to be like, well, 3 years ago, I don't know if you remember, but this happened. And so they do. So he helps them catch a lot of fish. And so this event turns into a fish roast on the beach. So they get out of the boat, they go to the beach, and kind of a little bit of jab, if you read the story, Jesus already has fish on the fire. So he tells them, go, you know, try the other side, catch a lot of fish. They catch a lot of fish. They come, they've got the fish. He's like, let's eat on the beach. I have these fish for you, which would be a little bit insulting if you ask me. You'd be like, okay, so we didn't need to do this at all. So that turns into this breakfast on the beach where the disciples spend some time in conversation with Jesus. After they ate their fish breakfast, Jesus turns this, his attention into Peter. And this is a significant moment. It's a significant moment for Peter. It's one that we're going to spy on here in a few minutes. It's a significant conversation for him, and it's very personal. It's very private, what happens here in John 21. And we find out that Jesus actually pulls Peter aside from the others, from this breakfast, and they take a walk for this conversation that Jesus and Peter, or really Peter, needs to have with Jesus. This is the conversation where Jesus restores Peter's relationship with him. You're hopefully familiar with Peter's story. We're going to talk about it a little bit more in depth. But what's very important for us to really grasp the significance of this conversation and how we can see ourselves here and be challenged ourselves is we need to understand Peter. So this is a little bit about Peter this morning. So we're going to get to verse 20 and we're going to read through it. But I want you to understand Peter before we do that. So eventually I'm going to read John chapter 21, verse 20, and you're going to go, that was the introduction? We're just starting? No, we'll be at the end when we get to John chapter 21, verse 20. So don't panic when we get to that moment. Calm down. Peter grew up on the coast of the Sea of Galilee in a town or a village called Bethsaida with his brother Andrew. And Bethsaida was a fishing village. It was it was connected to the Sea of Galilee by a small river. It was only a short walk from the sea itself. It was on the north end of the Sea of Galilee. And so Peter and Andrew, these brothers, they grew up into what many Bethsaida boys grew up into, fishermen. That's what you did if you were a boy and you grew up in Bethsaida. Fishermen in Peter's day fished by casting nets from boats. It was tough, hard, exhausting work. This wasn't put some bait down there and wait for the fish to gather around it, you know, with the trap nets. It wasn't that. They're throwing a net into the water and then pulling it up as quickly as they can and hoping that there are fish in that net. Sometimes there are, sometimes they're not. And so they throw it into the water again and they pull it back up. And then they throw it in the water again and they pull it back up. And they just keep doing this over and over and over again. That's fishing for Peter and Andrew and for all the boys and the men that from Bethsaida. It's tough. It is hard. It is exhausting work. If you have ever tried to pull up a bucket out of the water because it's full, it is not easy to do that. And they're doing this over and over and over again with heavy fishing nets with sometimes full of fish. And they just repeat this over and over again. That was the life that Peter was born into. He just knew, you're going to be a fisherman. You're going to be out in the sun doing the hard work and not always safe. Not always a safe occupation. But he and his brother Andrew, they embraced it. They became fishermen. They grew up into it. They became fishermen. And when he was old enough, Peter, and this is all, I'm summarizing what we learn about him from the Bible. And so you can go back through and kind of pick up on these pieces as well if you wanted to. When he was old enough, Peter got married. and started a family with a wife. When I say started a family, he got married. They didn't have any kids. But they moved a few miles southwest of Bethsaida to a larger town called Capernaum. And there, he started a fishing business with a couple of boats with two other partners, two brothers named James and John. And so this is in the town of Capernaum. It's not even an hour's walk away from Bethsaida, but he and his wife moved down there. They start a fishing business. This is right on the coast. This is a town. It's not a village. It's a little bit bigger. It has docks and places for the boats to stay. And so he starts this business, this fishing business, with his partners, James and John. And that's where Peter's story starts for us when we pick up in the Gospels. But it starts normal. It's an average story. It's a normal story. Guy grows up in the family business. He gets married. He tries to make a name for himself off the work of his back. Right. He's doing the blue collar work, establishing a decent life for himself and his family. That's where Peter starts. What's your story? What's your story? Everyone has a story. What's your beginnings? Peter's beginnings weren't special. They weren't significant. He was just doing what the family did, right? And then he wanted to make his own family. He wanted to make his own life. Do you relate to his blue-collar upbringing? Did you have a blue-collar upbringing where, you know, there were expectations from dad and mom, and the expectation eventually was, you're going to go make a name for yourself. You're going to go create your own life. You're going to work hard and earn what you get. Do you relate to the go do what you're good at, what you know? Go do it. Go do what you know. What are your skills? Have you played to your strength as your life has developed? Peter is doing the same thing, playing to his strength and growing up into this life that he's created for himself. And it's a good life. It's a hard life. It's a tough life, but it's a solid life that he's got. But it's a normal life. It's an average life. It's a life very much like yours, I would imagine. And this is where Peter meets Jesus, living according to his strengths, fishing at the Sea of Galilee. In the course of his everyday life, this guy Jesus shows up and begins to have significant conversations with Peter. We learn a lot about Peter as we read through the Gospels. One of the things that we learn about Peter is that Peter wasn't perfect by any means. Peter was not, he wasn't the standout, stellar, never done anything wrong kind of a guy. In fact, one of Peter's biggest personality issues is that he was impulsive. When you read through the Gospels and you catch on to some of these situations with Jesus and the disciples, you learn very quickly that Peter didn't always think before he acted. He just acted. He made very off-the-cuff decisions. He was quick to do those things. He spoke quickly without always thinking. He decided without considering. He acted without much caution before he would do those things. Peter was the kind of guy who couldn't always foresee the consequence of an action. You know, somebody who's just always like, this seems like a good idea, and they don't actually consider like, oh, but what about what's going to happen when I do it, right? They just kind of, Peter was like a 13-year-old boy, right? They just do it. They don't think about how is this going to affect me in the future. We're just going to do it, and it is what it is. He just went with the action. And his wife probably continually had to correct him and be like, Peter, we don't need a dog. Did you get this from a house, or is this just a dog you found in the street? We don't need another dog, Peter. Like, I'm sure his wife was constantly like talking him down, right? And reminding him, no, Peter, you can't do that. And I'm sure that happened often in their home. I wouldn't be surprised if there was the occasional conflict with his partners, James and John, because Peter was impulsive. Peter would make decisions quickly, and he may not have explained those decisions. And if you know much about James and John, their nicknames were the Sons of Thunder. They had tempers. James and John emotionally reacted quickly to things, and so I wouldn't be surprised if there were some loud conversations between the business partners about Peter's impulsiveness and why would you have gone and spent money on this or whatever it might have been? Who knows? But I imagine, you know, that there were times when it was dramatic and tense. Peter, if you're familiar with these stories, Peter is the one who climbed out of the boat to walk on the water with Jesus, only to quickly second guess, I just climbed out of a boat to walk on water with Jesus, right? There was a quick action and then an immediate, like, what did I just do? A second guessing of it. Peter's the one that we talked about earlier this summer who pulled Jesus aside and rebuked Jesus, right? He pulled him aside and rebuked him for talking like he was going to die. No, Jesus, come on. You're not, that's don't be so down on yourself. You're not going to die. That was Peter who thought it was a good idea to quickly pull Jesus aside and correct him and remind him that maybe you're wrong. Peter was the one who spoke off the top of his head about building tabernacles to honor Moses, Elijah, and Jesus during the transfiguration, which initially doesn't seem like a horrible idea. Let's just build some monuments to these three because there's a big situation here. Only though to have the glory of God drop him to the ground in correction that wasn't necessarily a good idea. He just spoke quickly, like, hey, maybe we should build, and God drops him to the ground in front of him and says, what are you talking about? That's not why we did this. Peter was impulsive and thought little about consequence. And yet, Peter was afraid of consequence too, which is really interesting about him. He was very impulsive. He was very impulsive, never thought, gave a thought to what might happen if I actually do this or say this or act on this, but he was also afraid of consequences as well. It's Peter who famously bragged that he would never turn his back on Jesus even if everyone else did. Peter's the one that bragged about that. But it was Peter who was too afraid of the consequences of being associated with an alleged criminal and denied his association with Jesus three times. So he's bragging, I'm never going to do that. And then when consequence suddenly comes, he's the guy saying, you know what, never mind. I don't know this guy. Those are the issues that we are aware of that Peter struggled with. Impulsive, decides quickly, and then at times quickly regrets exactly what he just said, thought, did. Right? He didn't always love what might happen as far as consequences. And was concerned about those. He was, we could call them flaws, if you want to call them. He was impulsive, idealistic, more bark than bite. He was inconsistent. What about you? Let's not be too hard on him. What is your fatal flaw? We see his here. We all have them. We all have our, I'm inconsistent. I'm too proud. I'm too angry. I'm too emotional. I'm too indecisive. You know, what do you relate to Peter's impulsiveness? Or are you debilitatingly hesitant? Maybe you're the other way, right? He's impulsive and makes decisions quickly, and you're thinking, I can never make a decision, and it causes problems. I can't do it. Do you struggle with pride, or do you struggle with insecurity? Are you stubborn, or do you bend, break, and reshape based on anyone else's opinions and thoughts? I just don't want conflict. What are the inner issues, the ones that no one could write about like they wrote about Peter, because they're not so visible. Everyone has them. And we see Peter's, we know about Peter's, we've written about Peter's, but he also had those inner ones that weren't actually written in here. But you have them too. You have your flaws. What is yours? What's your fatal flaw? Peter was impulsive. You can narrow it down to one. But everyone has them. Thomas was a skeptic. James and John were temperamental. Paul was proud. The list goes on. And would include something for you. But what we know about Peter, and it's important to remember this before we get to this text, is that Peter was an average guy living an average life, very much like yours, with distinct flaws and issues, just like you, like everyone else, and he was doing his best to follow Jesus. A blue-collar guy, just trying to make a life for himself, very obvious personality issues, was just trying to follow Jesus. Anyone else? You too, an average person with obvious flaws, just trying to follow Jesus. And Jesus used him again and again and again. This guy, he used Peter over and over. He worked with him. He worked through him. He challenged him. He changed him. He gave Peter the nickname Rock. He said, I'm going to call you Rock, or probably today Rocky. The Rock is already taken. So, I mean, Rocky's taken too. But Peter's name was actually Simon. That was his name. But Jesus called him, so sometimes when you read about it, you'll see the word Cephas, right? People call him Cephas. That's because Cephas is the Aramaic word. And Jesus, everybody then spoke Aramaic. I know we read in English and we know the Bible was written, the second half of the Bible was written in Greek, but they actually spoke Aramaic, and the Aramaic word for rock is Cephas. And so when they wrote the Bible, they wrote the Greek word for rock, because that's the language they wrote in, and the Greek word for rock is Peter. So we call him something no one ever called him back then. We call him Peter, which wasn't actually what he was called. He was called Cephas or Simon. We call him Peter, though, because that's our version of it. But that's, it means rock. Jesus told Peter that he would become, if he followed Jesus, the rock, a rock. The impulsive, think about that, the impulsive, quick to speak, emotional fisherman, and quick to regret, who lived like the sea he worked on, with ups and downs, back and forward, ebbs and flows, he would become, if he followed Jesus, an immovable rock. I think that's pretty cool that Jesus tells him way ahead of time, foreshadows, I'm going to change you if you follow me. I'm going to change you for the better. And Jesus worked with Peter again and again throughout his ministry, despite who Peter was, right? Despite his impulsiveness, despite these flaws, despite these issues, he worked with Peter again and again. And then, most infamously, we're all familiar with, Peter denied this relationship with Jesus. 3 years after it began, he denied that he had a relationship with Jesus. And I know you're aware of it, but I want you to see it. In Matthew chapter 26, beginning in verse 69, it's going to be on the screen here. I just want you to see this situation as it unfolds, knowing what you know about Peter, knowing who he was that we've just described. So Jesus was arrested. He was arrested and he's been taken to the high priest's house. Two disciples follow him that night that we know of, and one of them has a little bit more influence. That's John, and he's able to go inside into the inner courtyard, and he eventually gets it so that Peter can come into the inner courtyard as well, which may be the beginnings of where Peter began to feel uncomfortable, because they knew John is a follower of Jesus. And John comes out to Peter and says, hey, do you want to come inside? And so Peter reluctantly comes into the courtyard, not into the house. And it's there that we pick up the story. Peter is sitting in the courtyard. We don't know where John went. John may have gone actually inside. We're not sure. And a servant girl came to him. You also were with Jesus of Galilee, she said. Now, she's not asking him. She's telling him. She's like, I'm pretty sure I saw you. I saw you with Jesus of Galilee. And keep in mind, Jesus of Galilee is just behind closed doors being interrogated by the Jewish leaders, by the former high priest, and they're determining how really can we put this guy to death and do it quickly. But Peter denied it before them all. I don't know what you're talking about, he said. Then he went out to the gateway where another servant, so he didn't want to stand there with that, right? I don't want this conversation to go any further. So he goes and stands at the gateway where another servant girl saw him and said to the people there, not to him this time, to everybody else, hey, this fellow was with Jesus of Nazareth, and he denied it again with an oath. I don't know the man. That doesn't mean he cursed. It means that he promised. Like he made a promise. He swore an oath. I don't know if he went, like, you know, hand to God or whatever. He wouldn't have said that, but whatever they would have said, he swore an oath, I don't know the man. And after a little while, so this is getting a little uncomfortable for Peter, but again, remember, he's impulsive. He's quick to think, he's quick to act, and he's quick to be concerned about consequence after it happens, right, which we'll see. And after a little while, though, standing there went up to Peter and said, so they've been thinking about it, probably. They heard the servant girls talking about it. Maybe they're talking about them amongst themselves, and they're like, he looks like that guy. And then one of them says, wait, did you hear how he was talking? You heard his accent, right? So surely you're one of them. Your accent gives you away. And in Mark's version of it, he says you speak like a Galilean. Apparently there was an accent, right? It would be like us catching on to somebody from Georgia, right? He'd be like, yeah, you're not from around here. And Jesus from Galilee. And they felt, this is important to know, that during their day, they felt that people from Galilee weren't as smart as the rest of the Israel crowd. And so there was a stereotype from Galilee, and they're like, nah, you're definitely one of those backcountry Galileans. We can hear it in your accent. And why would a Galilean be here unless you were following Jesus of Nazareth, which happens to be, wait for it, in Galilee. And then he began to call down curses, and he swore to them, I don't know the man. And immediately a rooster crowed, which Jesus said is going to happen. And then Peter remembered the word that Jesus spoke. Before the rooster crows, you will disown me three times. And he went outside and wept bitterly. And there is the regret of the impulsive behavior. It's the regret of the consequences, the regret of the situation. And so you see that it says, in that third time, Peter calls down curses on them and swore to them that he didn't know Jesus. He's mad. He is mad. He is emotional. He's reacting to the possible consequence, and he's calling curses on them, which I'm not even sure what that would have looked like for them, but I know what it would have looked like now, and there would have been a lot of censorship if it was on TV. If we saw that, and then he swore to them, doesn't mean he cursed like the way we would believe it. It means that he's tripling down on this lie that he didn't know Jesus. But then you see the emotional swing. You see his reaction to that. When he realized what he had done, he wept bitterly. And I wouldn't be surprised if he went outside that gate and he threw up because of the swing of emotions that he was feeling. Imagine it. Imagine it yourself. This man had been by Jesus' side for 3 years. They were close. They were very close. And in an impulsive moment of fear, insecurity, doubt, Peter triples down on a very obvious lie. The servant girls knew who he was, right? These aren't exactly society's elite that would have observed him out there. They knew. Everyone knew. He doubles down on a very obvious lie that everyone around him finds like, go. Just go tell him he speaks like a Galilean. It's going to be like, at least maybe that'll get him to admit, okay, yes, I'm following this guy. But Peter didn't want to risk being connected to Jesus in that place on that night. It was a horrible moment for Peter. You imagine it. It was irreversible. He couldn't take back what he said. And so he wept bitterly at his decision, at what his flaw, his issues had caused. He wept bitterly, and who knows for how long. And I would imagine, in some way, shape, or another, because of your own issue, your own flaw, your whatever it might be, you have felt that. You have felt the consequence of it, and you have felt sick to your stomach, even wept bitterly yourself. A mistake or a decision that was so consequential or so significant that you knew there's nothing I can do to fix it, and you just felt sick. I imagine that that's in your past somewhere. It's part of your story. It's part of your story where if you were to say, my issue is pride, and I would say, give me an example, you can probably think of at least one very, very specific example in your past where you would say, this hurts somebody because of it. I hurt somebody because of my insecurity or because of my pride or because of my anger or because of my indecision or my impulsiveness or whatever it might be. I imagine that we can all relate to Peter in this moment. Maybe not the I would have never done that. I wouldn't say that out loud. But the feelings that he's feeling after that moment where he ran outside the gates and just wept alone in the night, I imagine you can relate to that in some way, shape, or another. But compounding things for Peter is that before the day is over, Jesus would be dead. And wouldn't you have wanted more than anything to go say, I'm sorry, talk it over, make it up? And you've probably felt that too. When your decision, your mistake, your situation, you've probably wished, I just want to go take it back, make it right, whatever it might be. None of the authors mention Peter being at the crucifixion. There were many women that were mentioned being there. His mom, Jesus' mom, was mentioned being there. John was mentioned being at the crucifixion. No one mentions Peter. When Jesus rose from the dead, Mary was told by the angels to go tell the disciples and Peter. The angel actually says, go tell the disciples and Peter, and separates him from the rest of them, separates him as almost as though he's in a different spot. He's not with them, so go tell them and Peter. When they tell him that the body was gone and Jesus is risen, Peter rushes to see if it was true. He rushes to find out. What John reveals to us is that the disciples were all staying together behind locked doors because they were afraid, as Jesus' followers, that they were next. And they stayed there for at least a week. behind locked doors because they were afraid that they might be the next. I would imagine, and I'm just assuming, that Peter was probably keeping to himself. Maybe he was there with them, or maybe he was behind his own locked door, just sick because of it. Imagine his struggles, if he was with them or wasn't with them, maybe being with the other disciples and struggling with his emotions and disappointment in himself, and none of them was there when he did it. Do you bring it up? Or do you look at every other one of them, the other 10, knowing, I've done something none of you know about and none of you can relate to, none of you would even want to hear, and bearing that yourself without saying anything about it? He was supposed to be the rock, but he was the failure, only slightly better than Judas. And he bears that. He struggles with that, I'm sure. And at some point, Peter, what we know is that after the resurrection, and Jesus appears to the disciples twice, and I imagine there's a lot going on in Peter's mind. There's excitement that he's seen Jesus, but it may not be someone he wanted to see right away, right? And how do you bring that up with Jesus, right? You know he's thinking it. You both know he's thinking about it. Everybody else is excited. All 10 are excited, and you're kind of excited, but you also know he's the only one that knows what I did. And maybe they weren't talking that much because Peter was avoiding him. And so at some point, Peter decides to go home, somewhere familiar, to go back to fishing, to go back to his life. I was a fisherman before. I'm just going to go back and do what's familiar to me. But things are different now. There's a lot that's changed in the 3 years since he was out there fishing. He's still the same person, but everything is different around him. Everything about life is different. He's still the same impulsive, the guy that Jesus called 3 years ago, but things are different. He bears the weight of 3 years of memories, and then a week, a day, a night, the weight of those thoughts. 3 years of history and memories and lessons with Jesus, who's risen now, but Peter's damaged that relationship on his end. It's probably a lot. You know, Jerusalem feels too dangerous, and so he goes home, and six of the disciples go with him. Six of them follow him. We don't know how the other disciples were dealing with the resurrection and dealing with everything that was going on. I'm sure they had a lot of questions for Jesus, but they weren't dealing with what Peter was dealing with. They weren't struggling through that. Peter, for sure, was in his head working through it, and so he goes fishing, which is where Jesus finds them in John chapter 21. This is the third time that Jesus has appeared to them, for some of them, not all of them, but this is where Jesus pulls Peter aside and intentionally gets Peter out of his own head and restores him and has the conversation that Peter's been avoiding, but that they need to have, that Peter needs to have. And Peter confesses in that conversation, yes, I'm devoted to you. Jesus has to ask him three times to push him, to hurt his feelings a little bit, to get him out of that space that he was in. And finally, Peter says, yes, broken, I'm devoted to you. I'm devoted to you. And then Jesus gives Peter a glimpse of his future. If you look at verse 18 of John chapter 21, when Jesus has finally gotten Peter to admit, I am devoted to you. I will always be devoted to you. I will follow. I will serve you. Jesus says this in verse 18. Peter, very truly I tell you, when you were younger, you dressed yourself and went wherever you wanted. Now, this is a metaphor. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else will dress you and lead you where you do not want to go. Verse 19, Jesus said this to indicate the kind of death by which Peter would glorify God. And then he said to him, follow me. So John is writing this, and John writes this years after Jesus' death. And so he includes in his commentary that Jesus was telling Peter, John knows now, they know what was said there, that Jesus was telling Peter that this is how he was going to die. What Jesus was saying when he said, someone else will stretch out your hands and dress you and lead you where you don't want to go. He's telling Peter, this is how you're going to die, Peter. That after, so he writes this after Peter's death. And so he says that what really was happening here is that Peter would be clothed for a crucifixion and then crucified. This is how Peter is going to die. And John is writing this after that crucifixion, after Peter died. So this is what Jesus tells him. Are you devoted to me? Yeah, I'm devoted to you. I am. And then Jesus says, good. You need to know how you're going to die. You're going to die exactly like me. You're going to be crucified. Now, history and tradition tells us that Peter refused to be crucified just like Jesus, and he asked to be crucified upside down. But let's continue in verse 20. So Jesus just told Peter how he was going to die, and then Peter turns, so clearly he understands what Jesus said. Peter turns and sees the disciple whom Jesus loved was following them. This is the one who had leaned against Jesus at the supper and had said, Lord, who is going to betray you? And then verse 21, when Peter saw him, he asked, Lord, what about him? And Jesus answered, if I want him to remain alive until I return, what is that to you? You must follow me. So it seems that Peter understood what Jesus was telling him about his death, that Jesus was telling him, you're going to be crucified. You're not going to want to be. It's going to happen before it's time, but you're going to be killed. You're going to be crucified. And it seems that Peter understands that because he turns around and sees John. John rarely uses his name. And it's funny to me that at the very end of the very last chapter of his book, he's still doing it, right? He says, so John never calls himself John. He always calls himself the disciple whom Jesus loved, or another disciple. He never actually says his own name, but I love the parenthetical here in verse 20. Like, we haven't been reading this for 21 chapters now, and he's got to remind us one last time, just in case you're curious who this is. This is, if you remember the story, this is the one that was leaning against Jesus at the supper and said this, we know, John, we know that you call yourself the disciple. We've seen it quite a few times now. But anyway, I'm getting away from myself. So Peter sees, so we know it's John. John is following them. This is how we know that Jesus pulled Peter aside quietly, and we know that John is following them, and Peter turns around and sees him, and he asks the question, what about John? Is John going to be crucified? That's how I'm going to die. What about him? Is he going to be crucified? Right? What's his story going to be? And Jesus tells Peter, don't worry about John. Don't worry about John, Peter. What if I wanted John to live all the way to my return? What if I wanted John to live all the way to my return? That doesn't affect you. That's not your story. That's his story, right? It doesn't matter to you. You must follow me. You must follow me, Peter. Don't worry about how he's going to follow me. Don't worry about his story and what his journey holds. Peter, you must follow me. And those words there, at the very end there, you must follow me, Peter, is what I, at the end of verse 22, is what I want to focus on as we finish this morning. Jesus' words here can speak a couple of truths into our own lives this morning. Jesus' words here, even though they were spoken to Peter, reveal something that is very true for you, very true of each of us. So imagine yourself, Peter. You are Peter. If you want to be called Cephas, that's fine. You have your own story. Every single one of us has our own story, and your story is unlike anyone else's. The way you were raised, the way you grew up, the principles, the values, the decisions that you made, the flaws that you have, the situations that you've gotten yourself into, the ones that you regret, the ones that you're excited about, you have your own story, and it's unlike anyone else's. Your story has combined to shape you. You have flaws. You have imperfections. You have made mistakes, maybe big ones, ones that left you bitter, or left others bitter. Your story is yours. Your story is unique, but it is no surprise to God. Your story hasn't surprised. Nothing about Peter's story surprised Jesus or God. Nothing about it. And your story is no surprise to God. David reveals to us in Psalm 139, verse 16, that God is fully aware of who we are. He's fully aware of what days and events are ahead of us. He says this. He says to God, David is reflecting on this truth, that God, your eyes saw my unformed body before he was born. All the days ordained for me, planned for me, ahead of me, were written in your book before one of them came to be. When you, when Peter, when I, when any of us were babies, before we were born, God saw each and every single one of us and saw what our story would become, what our story would be, saw the days ahead of us. He created you. He designed you with plans and with intentions. Now, sin corrupted what God made in you, so you have flaws, you have imperfections, your choices haven't fully reflect what his intention was, his will is. But that doesn't change the fact that God knows you and sees all of your days ahead of you, all of them. He knows them. And just like Jesus called Peter there beside that lake, knowing all he knew about Peter, Jesus calls you also to believe in him and follow him, and he knows all there is to know about you too. He knows the days ahead of you. You. He called you. Peter was wondering, well, what about John? You called him too. And Jesus' response was, we're talking about you, because I called you, Peter. and I have a story and a plan for you. He called you with your story, with your past, with your flaws, with your imperfections. Jesus calls you to believe in him and follow him with your bitter choices, with your mistakes, knowing the struggles that you have ahead of you, knowing the issues that might come. Jesus calls you to follow him. That you is really important. Jesus told Peter, don't worry about what following me looks like for John. Worry about what following me looks like for you. So this is where we need to listen, brothers and sisters. Jesus called you to faith. Jesus called you to follow him. How you follow him is not going to look like everyone else because you're you and they aren't. What he is calling you to is not going to look like anyone else because he's calling you with your personality, with your flaws and imperfections, with your background and your upbringing. He's calling you, and it's not going to look like anyone else's because you are you. The obstacles will be different. The highs and lows won't be the same. The destinations and detours will be unique. Stop comparing your journey or where God has you in life to others because he called you. You must follow him. Stop looking at your life and saying, well, what about them? Because they've got it better here. Or they've got this situation that's worked out for them and mine hasn't resolved at all. They've come here and I'm still there. Or they don't deal with this issue. I'm dealing with this issue. And God's response to you is, I called you. You must follow me. Don't worry about them. Don't worry about them. I'll deal with them. I am dealing with them. I call them to their own journey. Your story is different. Your story is unique. You must follow him on the path before you. It might be wealthy. It might be poor. He called you. It might be feast. It might be famine. It might be smooth. It might be rough. It might come easy. It might be a trek. It might have tragedy. It might have triumph. It will likely have all of those things, but it is your path to walk. When Jesus calls you, you must follow him. So think of your story. What has Jesus called to you, you two? How is he wanting you to grow? How is he wanting to challenge you and change you? Where are you right now? Stop worrying about what could have been, what should be, where others are. That is where he wants you to follow him right now. Kids, he wants to grow you. This is your call to follow Jesus as a child, not your parents. You own your faith. He's called you. He's called you to follow him. Don't lean on just, well, my parents have this taken care of. They do, and they're following him. You follow him too. Focus on you following Jesus. Put one foot in front of the other and take that relationship because it's yours and no one else's. That relationship with Jesus is yours and yours alone. You follow him wherever he's leading you. Do the work. All of us, of Bible study and prayer and church partnership, own that relationship. What does it mean to follow Jesus with your personality? What does it mean to follow Jesus in your neighborhood? It's not going to look the same as in my neighborhood. What does it mean to follow Jesus in your job, in your retirement, in your family? It is for you to lean into and pursue and work at. You must follow Jesus. He's calling you to follow him. And you can. You can. In your neighborhood, with your personality, with your past, in your job, you can follow Jesus effectively. Lean into his word. Lean into the Holy Spirit. Lean into prayer. Lean into the church. And follow him where he has you. And now the test of faith. What if you knew? What if you knew like Peter? What if you knew what was coming? What if you knew what struggles and difficulties were ahead, like Peter found out from Jesus? What if you knew what tragedy was a year down the road for you? What if you knew the coming cost to your life of following Jesus as you? Would you still follow him? Those with genuine, true faith will say yes. Even if I knew what the tragedy, the cost was going to be in a year, I would still follow him. Praise God. You must follow him. And I hope that that's your answer. I hope your faith is genuine and real and you are ready to do the work of following Jesus on your path. Don't worry about that guy behind you. Don't worry about those other people. Don't worry about what their story is and why they're doing better in this area. You must follow him. It is narrow, it is difficult, but it is the only path for a true believer. So to paraphrase Peter himself from earlier on, who else would you follow? Jesus is the one with the words of eternal life, and you must follow him. Let's pray.